My question relates to positivism, but in a certain way relates to many things you address because it deals with the question of science, which is a word you use a lot. I think in the book, Marxism and the Call of the Future, you make an aside along the following lines. Of course, when I talk about science, I don't mean a bourgeois conception of science. Could you speak to that point, and also speak to what it means methodologically to take a bourgeois approach to science? What are some examples or illustrations? What is the impact on the international communist movement of having that kind of approach, which I believe is a kind of positivist approach to science?
Yeah, well, just to be clear, what I didn't mean to say and don't believe it, there is bourgeois science and proletarian science. You know, there is just that there's not bourgeois truth and proletarian truth. What I meant was what you were pointing to, methodology. In other words, science which is either grounded in or characterized by or significantly influenced by a bourgeois methodology, you know, pragmatism, empiricism, positivism, reductionism, and so on, all of which exist in science in general, you know, as well as much better scientific methods, and, you know, and exist also in the social sciences as well as the natural sciences, and have existed to a significant degree in the communist movement. You know, Einstein, for example, ran up against certain of his limitations when, you know, he in sort of a priori at a certain point, having made a lot of contributions to science, you know, and physics in particular, sort of couldn't embrace certain things because they seemed to go against the idea of there being some sort of order. And, you know, that was this famous thing about, I don't believe God rolls dice with the universe. You know, so it was sort of an a priorism that got in there, you know, sort of certainly not a thorough dialectics. And not a thorough materialism either, you know. And there are a lot of other ways in which, in not only in the social sciences but in the natural sciences, various forms of, you know, I mean, positivism is an approach to science, you know, that you know, it's sometimes called scientism. You know, you think that the truth resides, you know, simply in the observable phenomena, that you can't get beyond them, you know, and that's what constitutes science, is identifying just more or less the phenomena and not actually making the necessary leaps and syntheses. There, you know, and then there's other forms of empiricism, and there's, you know, there's a lot of idealism, you know, gets into science as well, you know, that and, you know, in the form, for example, of a priorism, that something that, you know, you even reject a certain discovery because it goes against, you know, what's considered to be true, rather than proceeding from reality and then synthesizing it. And all of those kinds of tendencies have existed inside the communist movement. I mean, the empiricism and positivism, you know, and reductionism, you know, reducing things in a vulgar way to economic factors. You know, you know, for example, in the history of the Soviet Union, the whole thing of like class origin being linearly identified with class outlook, that the way that you deal with the mental manual contradiction is to produce working class intellectuals, and a lot of that was identified with engineers. You know, I won't repeat my comments about engineers from other talks. You know, it's not like I have a Jones against engineers, but, you know, there is certain limitation to that kind of thinking. But more importantly here, you know, sort of this direct identification, you know, of class origin with class outlook. You know, and there's that famous story where, you know, Bevan, who was a member of the British Labour Party, the so-called Socialist Party in England, during the, I think it was the 1940s, went, and he was a minister in the Labour Party government of British imperialism. And he went and he talked to this guy Vyshinsky, who was a member of the Soviet Party, who came from the nobility in old Russia. And at one point, Bevan says to Vyshinsky, well, you know, you're talking about the working class and the proletariat, and you have a proletarian state here, but you're out of the nobility, and look at me, I'm from the working class, and you accuse me of being an imperialist, but I'm from the working class, and supposedly, I don't know if this is an apocryphal story, or, you know, higher than life, or actually true, but supposedly Vyshinsky responded to this comment by saying, well, looks like we both betrayed our classes. Well, you see, in that answer resides the fact that there is not an automatic connection. I mean, there were problems with Vyshinsky and then the Soviet Party, but to the degree there was truth to that, it illustrates an important point. It's not an automatic connection between class origin or even class position and class outlook. There's a leap. There's a synthesis. You know, and this, there has been that kind of identification in the history, not only in the Soviet Union, but also to some degree in a much less, if you will, virulent or extreme form in China as well. You know, sort of the idea that, you know, if you have workers and peasants present, you know, while that is important in one dimension, there was an associated idea that somehow, you know, you would get more to the truth and to what was correct. That idea seeped in also. I mean, there was a statement, which never was an official statement by Mao, but it was a statement that came out, you know, sort of semi, if not literally officially, during the Cultural Revolution. When there was all this swirl and upheaval, and a lot of people were attacking the Cultural Revolution because there was a lot of craziness going on in the course of it, not surprisingly. And there was a sort of semi-official statement that said, the mainstream of the mass movement is always correct. Wrong. You know, and, you know, there are a lot of factors that enter, and that's a form of, you know, economism and tailing, but also, you know, In a sense, it's a kind of a positivism, too. And, you know, this, and generally a form of empiricism, there are a lot of these different kind of tendencies. You know, there are people who argue that, you know, right now in the international communist movement, there's a struggle over these epistemological things that I'm talking about. You know, and some people saying there's nothing new there, and insofar as it is, it's either not good or not applicable or both. You know, and arguing that, for example, that the social sciences are different than the natural sciences, excuse me, because in the social sciences, arriving at the truth, and even the truth itself, is bound up with class viewpoint. Well, that's a thoroughly wrong idea. You know, it's still true in the social sciences as in the natural sciences that truth is truth. Objective reality is objective reality, and while a class viewpoint methodology may, if it's applied systematically, comprehensively, in a thoroughgoing way, and more or less correctly, enable you ultimately to arrive at a higher synthesis of the truth, it doesn't automatically translate into your arriving at the truth about any particular thing. And conversely, someone with a incorrect methodology, proceeding from a whole different worldview, may arrive at the truth about something, you know, more fully, or, you know, in fact, where you have not. And this came up, for example, in this comment by Zbigniew Brzezinski that I answered in, phony communism is dead, long live real communism. Then I later made a criticism of my answer because he said, well, you know, one of the things that went wrong in the Soviet Union was that the whole history of autocracy, of sort of, you know, absolute monarchical government and all the absolutist kind of thinking and political structures that went along with that seeped into the communist movement. And I answered that on a certain level in Phony Communism is Dead, Long Live Real Communism, by saying, look, the Soviet Revolution negated that along with bourgeois democracy. And that was not a fully correct answer. In fact, there was a point that Brzezinski was getting at that I hadn't yet really fully and correctly engaged, and I tried to do so later. There was, truth to the fact that some of this did seep into the communist movement. It did have something to do with some of the problems of Stalin and the leadership of the Soviet Party. I mean, Mao, you know, Heidi already cited, you know, Mao in another dimension, this where he talked about how Stalin was educated in a, you know, basically a religious monastery and never completely shook off that kind of thinking. So that's sort of a parallel to what Brzezinski was raising. Well, it's not just correct because Mao said it, and when Mao says something like that, it's correct, but when Brzezinski said it, it's wrong because he represents the bourgeoisie. So there's, you know, that kind of thinking has had a lot of currency. In fact, I would have to say that it still exerts a very powerful influence in the communist movement. You know, that's kind of, you know, reductionism. You know, it's akin to empiricism and positivism in certain ways. That kind of thinking has had and continues to have a big influence in the communist movement. And it does a great deal of damage because it actually gets in the way of our correctly and ourselves and leading the masses to correctly grasp and therefore, you know, and on that basis transform reality. See, when the point is, we say that that communism is both partisan and objective. But it's not objective because it's partisan. It's objective because its methodology enables you to get at objective reality in the most correct way, to make the most correct approximations of actual reality in your understanding. And the reason it can do that at the same time as it's partisan is because it represents, not in a one-to-one reductionist sense, that it flows, you know, directly out of the workers in a positive sense. They're the workers, and they are both workers and the embodiment of working class consciousness. But in a much more complex and dialectical way, this outlook and methodology corresponds to the position and interests of the proletariat, not in a static sense, but in its motion toward communism, in its motion toward the resolution of the fundamental contradiction of capitalism by bringing about the overthrow of capitalism and the socialization of socially produced wealth and means of production and the advance beyond this whole epic. And so because it corresponds to that and because it's a methodology that's correctly, it can correctly approach reality, it doesn't have, you know, sort of institutionalized or inherent obstacles and impediments to getting at the truth. It is both a methodology that enables you to get at the truth, and its partisanship, because it's partisan for that in correspondence with that, doesn't get in the way of its getting at the truth. This has to do with the statement, and I'll end here. You know, it corresponds. This is why it corresponds to, and this is the importance of it, you know, all truths are good for the proletariat. Everything that's actually true will help us get to communism. It doesn't mean that it's directly good in the short run, but it means by correctly synthesizing and learning from that and using that to change the world more thoroughly, we'll get to communism. So we are partisan that way, but we don't have to violate the scientific approach in order to be partisan. And in fact, if we do violate the scientific approach that's represented by the communist world outlook and method, we will actually pervert the partisanship. We will actually undermine what it is we're partisan for and seeking to bring about.